This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome to the Diehards on Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McGraw producing the show, running controls back in H-Town. Jack, it's finally the weekend. How are you doing tonight?
It's going, Bobby. How are you doing tonight? Well, things are good in everywhere but Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, things are shaky. We are going to dive into the instability of the Dallas Mavericks. Thank you for the setup, Jack. Appreciate you. And then we're going to do the same regarding the New Orleans Pelicans. Two young stars deserving a little bit more free reign and exercising that belief as well. So we're going to dive into them in the second half of tonight's program. We're going to start with a lot of talk about what's happening on the hardwood with the teams who are still going. Nets and Bucks series has a Game 7 coming up. Sixers Hawks is getting juicy. And tonight, Game 6 underway in the A. Atlanta with a chance to punch their ticket to the conference finals. We'll see if they can do so, and my thoughts on what happens if they cannot. We're also going to get into Jazz Clippers. No Kawhi, no problem for PG and company in Game 5, but that's an elimination game tonight as well. We'll see if they can finish the job against Utah. And because the hits keep on coming, the NBA is dropping bombshell after bombshell after bombshell the last few days, and so the Kemba Walker trade is something we will absolutely be dissecting, where the Celtics go from here, what this means for Kemba's future, and so you better believe we will get to the NHL playoffs as well. We've got Stephen Ellis from the Hockey News to join us. He's also a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. We're going to talk a little Aaron Rodgers, and per usual, we will have a gambling corner with Connor Mack from Pub Sports Radio. So stick with us here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. We also are going to talk about the best players under 25 in the NBA. So there's a little extra teaser and some free money for you. Stick with us here, Sports Map Radio Network.
Listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky here on the mic. Jack McGraw running controls back in Houston. I told you, we're going to start with the series that are going on. Right now, the Sixers trail the Hawks in a pivotal elimination game 6, 27-20, ATL on top. But let's get to the game that happened. At this point, I honestly can't even remember if it was last night or two nights ago between the Nets and the Bucks. Just kidding. I know it was last night. But it's been that type of a whirlwind with all the NBA news that's happening and these games coming at you nonstop. So let's start with last night's action between the Nets and Bucks. Milwaukee able to force a pivotal and decisive Game 7 with all the marbles on the table. Giannis had 30 points, 10 free throws. Most importantly, no three-point attempts. This is how he needs to play. He made a point of emphasis after Game 5, or excuse me, he made a point of emphasis about Game 5 following last night's matchup that he thought the team played well in Game 5. It just didn't go their way, thanks in large part to Kevin Durant having a monster performance. And that's a fair point, but I think that he was not thrilled with how he played individually. He fumbled the ball at the end of the game, I think because he didn't want to go back to the free throw line, where he takes longer than Usain Bolt does to run 100 yards. And James Harden, he two-time MVP, you can't get a mismatch against a poor defender on one leg and have James Harden wave off Landry Shamet, the help to come double team, because that lets you know what Harden thinks about what you're about to do. And sure enough, Giannis takes a turnaround jumper and he clanks it. So Giannis knows he needs to be better than that. He knows he needs to be more aggressive than that. And credit to him, he went out in game six with their season on the line, and he made the necessary adjustments to help get his team to a game seven. And according to Kirk Goldsberry of ESPN, Giannis's average shot distance in last night's game was 5.6 feet. That's significantly lower than it's been all series. His previous best was nearly 9 feet. But the guy who took them home was Chris Middleton, and not in the traditional sense of closing out a tightly contested matchup. But he's the reason the Bucks didn't have to sweat it out last night, that Kevin Durant and James Harden got pulled early. Middleton dropped 38 points on 16 shots. He was 5 of 8 from 3. And for a guy who's not known for getting to the free throw line, which isn't to say he doesn't, but he's certainly not known for doing it at a high volume, 11 for 12 from the stripe. And a lot of those were fouls that came beyond the arc. And those helped get Chris Middleton in rhythm and helped him sustain that. So he was huge for Milwaukee last night. He was their best and most important player in that game, even though, like I said, they need Giannis to continue to attack the basket and not settle, especially when it comes to those long-range attempts. And what's obvious about the Nets that finally got exploited in this game that didn't in the last one is that they can't push the tempo. They are limited to half-court offense. The difference in fast break points last night was 26-4 in favor of Milwaukee. In Game 5, it was 2-2. That's for the entire game. That's absurd, and the Bucks know it. And that's on Bud, who I've railed against a number of times, and I don't think he's back unless they get to the finals at this point. And even then, if they go through a banged-up Brooklyn squad and the Atlanta Hawks, I'm guessing that John Horst, the general manager, and the rest of the front office is going to be torn on that decision and probably prefer to move on, especially if they can get someone like Rick Carlisle. We're going to talk about him later in the show tonight. But they might have to just ride with Bud if they get to the finals. And at this point, look, Game 7's at Barclays, but the Bucks are the better team. They should have won the last one. They melted down like Mickelson at Wingfoot. And so that's on them. Credit to KD and Jeff Green for sure. But they still should have won that game. And now we'll see what happens in Game 7. But really, when you look at it, they should get to the conference finals and the NBA finals to go along with it. And we'll see if they can pull it off. That's one of those adjustments, though, that it's not just on Budenholzer. That's on Jrue Holiday as the point guard. That's on the assistant coaches. Darvin Ham and Charles Lee have a legitimate chance to get head coaching opportunities this summer. Both are deserving. I get having respect for the guy at the helm, but there's nothing wrong with standing up, whether it's during a timeout, whether it's just to Bud during the flow of the game and saying, we need to push the tempo. We need to play faster than this. The Nets are limited to a half-court offense. We don't have to follow suit. And if they are doing that, especially to the players, and that message wasn't getting through, that's a concern for those guys as they interview for head coaching opportunities. So I don't know whether they said it, whether they didn't say it. If not, why was that the case? But it is a concern. Although, to their credit, the Bucks were able to flip the script, like I said, 26-4 fast break points in Game 6. So they need to stick with that formula. And Kevin Durant, I thought that he exemplified the reality that the Nets didn't go into last night's game in Milwaukee with the idea that let's step on their necks and end the series tonight. It was a group that's very confident, rightfully so, that they're going to win Game 7 in their building. And so it was kind of more of just a, let's see how this goes, and they didn't really make shots, and they were okay to pack it in. KD had 32 points on 30 field goals. He was 2-for-8 from 3. Not a typical performance from him. Understandable, coming off an all-time game, arguably the best he's ever had in the postseason, and so therefore you could say of his career when he dropped 49 points in Game 5. But I think that the Nets were, like I said, content, that they were okay with going back home with a chance to close it out because in their minds, there's no way they lose this game. And when you look at the pedigree of their best players, that has to be the mindset. James Harden, he had 16 points on 9 shots to go along with 7 assists and 4 steals. Credit him for being out there. But Milwaukee, they finally did a little bit of a better job attacking him, not to mention pushing the pace. They could do it even more. And I think what they saw, and that Giannis missed turnaround fadeaway in Game 5 in Brooklyn against Harden actually exemplifies it. The one area you can count on James Harden is down low in the post defensively. So on that side of the floor, of course, I'm not talking offense, obviously, when I say one area you can count on him. And so They made it easier for him, especially on one leg. They need to get this guy moving laterally. Attack him, put him in the pick and roll, all that stuff. Get him moving. Whoever he's got should be run off. Pin downs, coming up to the ball from the wing, all that stuff. Keep him active. Don't let him breathe. You need to test it, just like the Lakers relentlessly went at Anthony Davis in Game 6. Credit to James Harden for being out there to help his team. But if he's going to do so, you got to make him pay for it. And the other guy that Brooklyn needs to step up is Joe Harris. I'm stunned by the fact that he's been a pumpkin this postseason. Last night he was 1-for-4 from beyond the arc and had 9 points. And that 1-3, you saw those screams of frustration after he made the shot, but he didn't bounce back. That didn't get him going. And so that doesn't mean you don't do it. You never know what's to come. But I wouldn't be surprised if he erupts in Game 7 at home. Role players tend to perform better in their own buildings. So we'll see what Joe Harris does, but he's another one. If he doesn't step it up, Brooklyn, that's going to be one of the main reasons they go home, given their injuries. But another area to keep your eye on, the free throw discrepancy. Last night, 28-14 in favor of Milwaukee. So if the officials favor one side significantly, like what happened in Game 5, Brooklyn very upset after the game, from Steve Nash to KD and on down the line, they complained about it at their pressers. I think we all know if it swings dramatically towards one side, who we would submit as our answer for it to benefit. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But needless to say, you get 14 extra attempts and you're making the most of them like Milwaukee was. It's one of the biggest differences in the game right there. And thus begs the question, as we get ready for Game 7 tomorrow night at Barclays, who would this be a worse loss for? I think the answer is Milwaukee, and here's why. I'm going to get to both sides, but let's start with the Bucks. I think it's a worse loss for them for the simple fact that they're kind of locked into the situation they're in right now. They gave Drew Holiday the big contract. They sacrificed all those picks to bring him in. They've got Giannis on the max extension. They paid Middleton. So the only thing holding them back right now is coaching, and they could stand to upgrade the rotation so they're less dependent on guys like Pat Connaughton and Dante DiVincenzo and Bryn Forbes. But nonetheless, this is their dream scenario where I just don't see them being title favorites in the near future. And it's going to take injuries. They've got them. This is their chance. They need to maximize it. I think it's a worse loss for Milwaukee. I do want to analyze it from a Brooklyn side. So I'm going to get to that on the other side of this break. Stick with us on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside. Or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. So like I said, we were examining just before that last break, who would this be a worse loss for? And I submitted to you the Milwaukee Bucks, because even though they don't have the right coach for the job, it's as good a chance as they're going to get. They're not going to be title favorites in the near future. Their roster's locked in. So they need injuries to pull teams back to the pack. LeBron James and Anthony Davis are eliminated. Brooklyn has James Harden on one leg and Kevin Durant, and that's it. And Durant's got to be exhausted right now. Doesn't mean he won't deliver another all-time performance in Game 7, but that's one of the best games, maybe the best he's ever had in the NBA. On, what was it, Wednesday night at this point, Tuesday night when he dropped 49 points in Game 5. So if you're the Bucks, I don't care that the game's on the road. I don't care who your head coach is. You have to seize this opportunity, and you might get the Atlanta Hawks in the Eastern Conference Finals. If that happens, they have to be lunch meat. You have to get to the NBA Finals. And from there, if you lose and it's a competitive series, so be it. You can probably just tip your cap to the other team. We understand your flaws, Milwaukee, but You're certainly good enough to get there. You've been a legitimate heavyweight and top three team in the East, one of the best in the league. You got to capitalize. For the Nets, though, because I said we're going to explore both. For Brooklyn, Kevin Durant turns 33 in September. James Harden will be 32 in August. Kyrie turns 30 next season. And no, that doesn't figure to be a problem in and of itself, but this is someone who's dealt with injuries not only his whole NBA career, but he only played in a handful of games as a Duke Blue Devil as well. So you mean to tell me that all of a sudden on the other side of 30 is when he's going to start staying healthy? And I get it. This one was fluky. He just, it was an awkward landing. He turns his foot coming down on Giannis's shoe. Certainly not dirty, but nonetheless, it was just bad luck for Kyrie in this instance. But these undersized point guards, and Kyrie at 6'2 is a little bigger than the Kemba Walkers and the Allen Iversons of the world, but when they're putting so much pressure on specifically their knees, you only have so much mileage on the odometer, and Kyrie's burned a lot of it already. So that is a cause for concern in that regard. And if you're the Nets, you once again, just like with Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, sacrifice the future for the present. And this was your championship to lose. I felt that way before the Harden trade, certainly afterwards. If it doesn't work out because of injuries, as unfortunate as that might be, even though they have every right to look at themselves as title favorites coming into next season with the same caveat, they're going to be clutching their pearls and holding their breath and crossing their fingers because you just have no idea who's going to be there for them and who won't be come the playoffs. So we'll see. Maybe they gut it out and they get this win. They've got plenty of reason to be confident. I can't back the Bucks with 100% certainty. I actually lean towards the Nets. But we'll see. If they win this game and all of a sudden they can hold on in the conference finals until Kyrie comes back, then championship parade back on track. But like I said, it's a do-or-die game seven. It took an all-time performance from KD to go along with 27 points from Jeff Green and a big night from Blake Griffin to get them out of there and not lose four straight. So we'll see if they can pull it off. That's going to be interesting to watch because there is a lot on the line clearly for both teams. And if you're a Nets fan, you know not to assume that they're just going to be back next year and able to get this championship if it in fact slips through their fingers because of injuries. All right, let's move on to the other series in the Eastern Conference Finals. Sixers and the Hawks. Atlanta, I got to start with an apology. I've noted Trae Young's growth. I thought you had no chance this series. I told everyone, the game one happens. It's a blowout. It's classic overreaction season. And we shouldn't be going down this road thinking that this is going to be one of those where an upset happens in a league where they rarely occur. I didn't buy it. You got stomped in game two. I said, there we go. Ben Simmons is on Trae Young. They're taking away his airspace when he comes off screens beyond half court. They're picking him up earlier. I think that Atlanta doesn't have a counterpunch in them. Turns out Trae Young did. He has once again been thrown into the fire and come out a better man for it. So props to him leading this Atlanta Hawks team. He's someone who I loved coming out of the draft because of three traits: elite shooter, passer, and ball handler. I don't love the Steph Curry comps. I think he's kind of more like Steve Nash, if you ask me. But nonetheless, he's also probably might be the closest thing to Curry as well right now in the league. And what he has added is not just the ability to trust his teammates more, which is an ability. That's a skill. Not everyone develops that, especially the greats at a young age who are given the keys to a franchise. We're going to get to a couple other guys. Jack McGraw knows who I'm talking about later on in this program. So once he started doing that and showing off less of the handles and trusting his teammates, giving up the ball faster, the whole team got better. That was step one in his evolutionary growth this season. Step two kind of came out of nowhere, if you ask me, and that's him getting to the free throw line far more frequently than we were accustomed to seeing. He's averaging 9 free throw attempts per game in the postseason. That's the third most, and it's compensating for the fact that he's actually not shooting all that well. He's making 33% of his three-point attempts, but you wouldn't know it by the fact that he took 19 free throws in Game 5. That's 6 more than Joel Embiid, who's also a master at drawing fouls. He had as many foul shots as John Collins had points, and Collins scored the third most points in the game. So Trae's putting up nearly 30 points per game in the playoffs to go along with 10 assists, and he's got the Atlanta Hawks one win away from the conference finals. And you got to give a shout out to their bench mob as well. Gallo came into that game and dropped 16 points. Lou Williams had 15. They both hit huge shots, especially from beyond the arc. And the Atlanta Hawks second unit is one of the biggest storylines that's not getting talked about in this series. They outscored the Sixers bench in Game 5, 39-13. And so now let's look at the anatomy of the collapse. Hawks' second unit, compared to what Philly's getting from theirs, is a big part of the reason why. Atlanta went on a 26-point rally to win that game. The list of Sixers who made a field goal in the second half is literally just Joel Embiid and Seth Curry. End of list. The Hawks trailed 87-69 entering the fourth quarter and then proceeded to outscore the Sixers 40-19 in the final frame. With 4:23 left, the Sixers had a 97.5% chance of winning the game. And here's my message to you now, Atlanta. If the Hawks don't finish them tonight, they will lose this series. Philly has their backs against the ropes. Maybe Joel Embiid responds with a monster performance, comparable, even if not at the level of what Kevin Durant did in Game 5 in Brooklyn, but along those lines, where he puts the team on his back. He's certainly capable of it as a two-way menace. Maybe Tobias Harris shows up. Maybe Ben Simmons starts to make a basket. But doesn't matter. All the excuses, whatever you want, Trae Young, Clint Capella, Bogdanovich, you guys have gotten it this far. Now you need to take it home. You need to stamp your ticket tonight, because if it goes 7, the Sixers are winning this series, and it will just be the cute team that everyone treated you like to this point, Atlanta. You want to really get people's attention and hold it? You got to get the job done. You got to get to game. You got to get to the Eastern Conference Finals now. Let's pivot and talk about Ben Simmons' trade value. In that Game 5 collapse, he had 4 shots. That right there is unacceptable but not surprising. 8 points, same category. And he missed 10 free throws. I think that everyone's running with, where is Ben Simmons' trade value at the moment? I wouldn't do it for this guy. I wouldn't do it for him. I think the reactions have gone a little bit too far. I still believe that Ben Simmons can be the second best player on a championship team if that first guy is elite. So much more unrealistic to think that happens. But even look, do Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum win a championship? Maybe. I think if those two are the top guys on the team, that they are a title contender. Some people are laughing and saying no because look at Ben Simmons and how he disappears in the postseason. I still think we're talking about an elite defender, second in the running for Defensive Player of the Year this year, talking about a multiple-time All-Star. We're talking about an elite facilitator when pushing the ball. I think absolutely with certain cases, and I would include Tatum on that list, that he can be the second best player on a championship team. More likely, though, is he's third. Even if the Sixers had a more reliable closer than what they're working with right now, for example, if they had someone we're going to get to later tonight, and that's Kemba Walker, I think this series is already over. Maybe it ends tonight in favor of Philadelphia, 6-game series. So I think that's one of the biggest things that the Sixers are missing, despite the clunky fit between Simmons and Embiid. The one that I like is Simmons to Portland for C.J. McCollum. I think that's fair value. But you can go on and on down the line and say, wouldn't trade him for Brandon Ingram and wouldn't trade him for Paul George and all this talk. I think that it's gone overboard would be my biggest point. I still think Ben Simmons offers a lot of value. And especially, for example, if you're the Wizards and Bradley Beal asks out this summer, we're going to get to him later on in the show tonight as well. But if Bradley Beal asks out and the return you got was Ben Simmons and some picks, I wouldn't clown that. I know some people will. I would not. I think that's fair, and you can build around Simmons, understanding you can't be the best player on a title team. Probably not going to be second unless you can get yourselves one of those elite upper echelon talents, but certainly is the third best player on a championship squad. We've got a lot to get to. Coming up next is the talk on the ice with Stephen Ellis from the Hockey News. So stick with us here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network. Bobby Krivitsky on the mic. Jack McCraw running controls back in Houston. Now let's get out to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Excited to be joined right now by Stephen Ellis, web editor for the Hockey News and a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Stephen, thank you for once again taking the time to join us on the Diehards.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. So let's start with the Knights and the Canadiens. In Game 1, Marc-Andre Fleury stopped 28 of the 29 shots that came his way en route to a 4-1 win for Las Vegas. Then in Game 2, they get down 3-0 but scored the next pair and gave themselves a chance to at least force overtime, ultimately falling 3-2. What do you like that you've seen from the Knights so far, and what do they have to clean up to take a 2-1 edge in the series tonight?
Well, so far, it's looking pretty good in Game 3. Last I checked, they had a 12-0 shot advantage in the first period. So it's been a very good start. The thing about playing against the Canadiens in particular, the Canadiens, if they score first, they play a really good shutdown defense that forces the team to chase the rest of the game. And what we saw in Game 2 was that Montreal scored early, and they did score a few more goals, but then they forced Vegas to chase. And the Canadiens do a good job of really shutting the teams out. Carey Price obviously playing that good. But when you look at it, Vegas is the team with the better talent, the better depth all around. And in a Game 7 situation, I pick Vegas 100 times out of 100 over Montreal in that case. But what we've seen with Vegas is they've been the better team overall in this series. They just need to be able to not have to chase, because as easy as it sounds, Vegas has got a lot of talent. They can kind of do a lot of things right at every position. But chasing a Montreal Canadiens team, it's like with Tampa having to chase the Islanders. That's a tough thing to do because they'll shut you out. So as long as Vegas continues to play their high-attack, high-offensive game, and what we've seen so far in Game 3, that's exactly what they're doing, it's going to work out for them in the end.
Steven, I think you're right on the money there. But the Montreal is the Cinderella story of this postseason run so far. And so while it may be a tall task, what do they have to shore up in order to get the win, at least tonight, to take a 2-1 lead in the series?
Well, they're going to need a lot from their offense. And I know that sounds simple enough, but this is a team that doesn't score a lot of goals, and they win a lot of the games by scoring 3 goals and going 3-2 or 3-1. So they need guys like Brendan Gallagher to really show up here. They need Shea Weber. Shea Weber hasn't officially been diagnosed as being hurt, but he definitely does not look like the Shea Weber we're used to seeing. He's not taking those long bombs from the point that we're used to. So they need those guys that are used to being involved in the offense to be like that. They can't rely a lot on Cole Caulfield kind of showing up every single game and Tyler Toffoli. They need a bit more. So they've got the defensive side of things worked out. Their goaltending's really good. They just need a couple of guys to really show up offensively outside of Cole Caulfield and all of his assists and Tyler Toffoli with all the goals he's been able to score.
Yeah, and you mentioned the netminding of Carey Price, who had 29 saves to help them hold on to tie up the series. So we'll see if he can work his magic once again tonight to give them the lead 2-1, although certainly it would be surprising. Like you said, the Knights are a wagon. And so now on the other side of the bracket, the Lightning lead the Islanders 2-1. Game 3 is tomorrow night. Is there an area New York can exploit Tampa? What is it going to take for the Islanders to even the series?
See, that's a tough one, because when you look at it, you look at a Tampa Bay team that won the Stanley Cup last year. They got that experience. They know what it takes. And you got an Islanders team that could have gone to the Stanley Cup final. They ended up losing to the Islanders or to the Lightning last year. And when you look at it, when it comes to the goaltender, the Lightning have the advantage. When it comes to defense, I still think the Lightning has the advantage. And up front, the Lightning definitely has the advantage. But what the Islanders do is it's kind of like Montreal. They'll score first, or they'll take a 2-0 lead. And they'll make your life miserable the rest of the night. They'll just grind it down so there's nothing left. They got one of the best defense groups in the entire NHL, so they need to rely on that a lot. As long as Varlamov continues to play as good as he can, he'll keep them in the games. But it is a situation where the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think a lot of people expect them to make the final again. My prediction before the season was Tampa versus Vegas. And it could definitely be that way. But with Tampa, that's a team you really got to be able to slow down those guys. And that's easier said than done when you have to play against Kucherov, Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, and you've got other guys that are just really showing up. So Lightning is kind of getting offense from everywhere, and that's something where the Islanders need to shut them down. But I got to say, I really hope this series goes to this. It is outstanding hockey.
Yeah, and I want as many games at Nassau Coliseum as possible Well, there still can be. I think your Stanley Cup prediction is going to come true. And in regards to the defending Stanley Cup champions, are we looking at a team that's better than they were last season?
I would say definitely to a point. Obviously, the fact that they were able to I know a lot of comments have been made about the long-term injury reserve situation where they were able to sit out Kucherov, but the fact that they could lose their best offensive player, a guy two seasons removed from being the MVP in the league, and still be one of the top teams in the league, that's unbelievable. This team is just, they seem to be better as a group than they were a year ago. So I could definitely put a good argument in for that, for sure. This is a team that a lot of people kind of almost wrote them off against Florida. It was kind of weird seeing a lot of predictions where they had Florida winning that series. And it's like, Florida was a good team this year, but the Lightning, again, played without their best player all year. And then they got him back, and they've been able to do a really good job. So hats off to Breezeball for putting on a really good team there. It's very hard to put a team that close to the cap each year and be so competitive. And obviously they found a loophole that they were able to get around everything. But they put a team together that is just, like, it's so exciting to watch every single night. You're expecting so many great things. So I would say, yeah, it's a very, very good argument to be made.
Yeah, they're just loaded up and down the roster. I would describe their cap shenanigans as Belichickian. And, hey, the rules, they were able to exploit them. You tip your cap in this instance, although obviously a lot of teams, especially the ones that they've gone up against and perhaps might meet up with in the Stanley Cup Finals, probably not loving that they were able to do this. Now, being the better team doesn't guarantee they'll hoist the Stanley Cup, but who do you like more between the Knights and the Lightning?
I've always been hesitant to change my Stanley Cup prediction when a team makes the finals. And I did predict Vegas to win the cup, but I just think Tampa's just got I don't know if swagger is the right word, but they've got just, you feel so much more confident watching that this team. You look at Vegas, their run's been kind of imperfect to this point. And of course, if Montreal takes them to 6 or 7 games, yeah, you know, we expect a longer series for the semifinal, but I don't think anyone expected Montreal to get to this point at all. And the fact that Montreal could potentially push them far wouldn't really bode well for a team that struggled against the Minnesota Wild. So I would think Tampa Bay's got the advantage there, but I also, just for my own sanity, I kind of hesitate to go away from my pick. And Vegas, this is a team that, you know, they don't have the same top-end talent that the Tampa Bay Lightning have, but what they have is outstanding depth. They grind you so much, and they just play such a perfect team game that it's hard to ever bet against them. But I think if I had to pick right now, and not off of previous predictions, I'm going Tampa, but it would be a very close series no matter what. I think it's almost a perfect scenario where the NHL gets the two best teams that truly deserve to be there battling out for the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I was very impressed by the way the Knights, after a slow start against the Avalanche, handled that series. And it was interesting. We had Ryan Boulding on from Mile High Sports a few weeks ago, and he said his biggest concern for the Avs in that matchup was that Colorado hadn't really dealt with adversity on the ice this season, and so he was wondering how they'd respond to it, and we saw the answer was not well, 4 straight for the Knights. And so now, look, they've had some tough times, let's say, with teams you think that they could more easily dispatch, but it's the postseason, and when teams get hot, it's hard to contain that momentum. So I'm with you. I would stick with it, and, you know, it's hard to read too much or overreact to these matchups in the postseason and some of the grinded out nature of what the Knights have had to go through to get to this point. Switching gears now, Pierre LeBrun of The Athletic reported conversations between the Sabres and some of the suitors for Jack Eichel are heating up. There's even a chance he gets moved before the end of the playoffs. In your opinion, where are the best landing spots for the 3-time All-Star center?
Well, I hate to see him leave Buffalo because it seems like it's a total waste of time in everyone's part that they couldn't do anything to make that team better when he was there. But in reality, that's just been the case. In terms of teams that could really use him, there's a lot, obviously. But I think teams like Boston, if they could, they would have to pony up a lot. And this is a team that Obviously, they don't have many years left, I think, in their Stanley Cup window with the current core they have. But, of course, guys like Pasternak's a little younger and Charlie McAvoy. And maybe they do build around this new core. And they got good goaltending coming up. So they do have some pieces that they could trade away. And, obviously, I think if Eichel had to probably choose anywhere to go, I think he would love to go to Boston because he's got the connections there. That's where he's got lots of family and friends. So that's somewhere that he would probably love to go in terms of actual assets and trading who could get them. A team like the New York Rangers or the LA Kings, they've got a lot of assets they could trade off. And plus, they do have some good draft pick options this year where they will be able to pick early enough where they can kind of replenish it a bit more. So I think those teams have a lot of good opportunities, obviously with really good prospect bases and some guys that are on the team now that they could probably move out. And I think if you got Eichel there in L.A., like if you were to trade a guy like Quinton Byfield, if you're like L.A., Byfield's one of the stars of the future for the team, but Jack Eichel's ready to be that star today, and I think that's exciting for the team. So those two teams are the ones I'd say the best, and then I think if you're looking for an emotional one for Eichel himself, it'd probably be the Boston Bruins.
And who are some of the other big names to keep an eye on who might be taking their talents elsewhere this offseason?
Well, the one for sure is Seth Jones, and the one name or one team that gets mentioned a lot, it sounds like, is the Chicago Blackhawks, a team that obviously the defense core, Brent Seabrook's gone, and they've got Duncan Keith. He's only got a few years left, so they're going to be looking for some guy to take over. And this is a guy that, from what I've been told and what I've heard, he wants to be a captain somewhere. And if you're the Blackhawks, you're looking at Taze. You don't know how many more years he's got left, especially if the illness is going to keep him out longer. We don't know really what the status is there. That'd be a good place for him, but obviously a lot of teeth to go on in Seth Jones. Dougie Hamilton is someone who won't be traded, but it'd be interesting to see what happens with him because I think it'd be a shame for the Carolina Hurricanes to let him go because he's someone that is very important to that team, and they're in the cup contention window right now. They could be competing for cups the next couple of years, so it'd be a shame to lose one of your best players for nothing over free agency, but I think they're going to work towards getting him. Otherwise, a lot of teams are going to be looking for him. So those are the names I'm definitely keeping an eye on this offseason. Of course, you got to keep an eye on what's happening with Ovechkin. I don't think he goes anywhere but Washington, but you never know.
I would hate to see him end his career in another uniform, but time and time again, we've seen stars all around sports have to do so. Hopefully the Caps and Ovi can work out an arrangement that allows him to spend the rest of his career in the nation's capital. Let's pivot now because it is award season. Alexander Barkov of the Florida Panthers takes home the Selke Award tonight. First person to do so in Panthers franchise history. Is that who you thought was most deserving of the trophy?
I'm surprised it took him this long to kind of win the Selke because he fits the mold perfectly. So, yeah, he's definitely the one that I would have picked, and I didn't get a chance to pick this year, but I would have probably picked him. Obviously, it's something where you look at guys like Bergeron and Crosby every year you got to keep an eye on, but I think Barkov is continuously showing. He's kind of had the for about maybe 4 or 5 years, he's been considered one of the most underrated players to the point where it almost feels like he gets overrated at some point. But, no, he is truly deserving of that, and he probably wouldn't have won an MVP award this year, but to me, he was one of the best players in the league altogether, no matter what, on a team, the Florida Panthers, that really took a nice step up. So I think that's it's a really good sign for Florida Panthers fans.
Adam Fox of the Rangers, Cale Makar of the Avalanche, and the Lightning's Victor Hedman are the trio nominated for the Norris Trophy. Who do you think it goes to?
Well, if I'm going with what I believe the mainstream media hockey would be picking, it's Hedman. If I'm going by numbers, it's hard to argue against a guy like Adam Fox. Adam Fox did so much for that Rangers team that kept them in contention. If he was hurt for most of the year or didn't have him, the Rangers would have been much farther down the standings. He was a bright spot for the team almost every single game he played. So he's my pick. But Victor Hedman, this is a guy that everyone kind of expected to take this award at the beginning of the season, and obviously he didn't disappoint. But I think if you're going to be looking in terms of actual best defenseman in terms of all the analytics and stuff, I think you got to go with Adam Fox.
Yeah, he certainly had a tremendous campaign this season. And lastly, between Vasilevsky, Grubauer, and Marc-Andre Fleury, who do you think is going to win the Vezina?
I think It's safe to say in terms of importance to team, I think Fleury was definitely more important than the other guys. But statistically, and that will always be the way I look at it, Vasilevsky had one of the best goaltending seasons we've seen in a long time. And it's a shame because I think Fleury maybe would have won with the season he had. He maybe would have won it last year. And obviously Connor Hellebuck played really good last year. But I just think the way Vasilevsky played, and it could be saying, you know, like Tampa Bay is a really good team, but so is Vegas. And for Tampa Bay, I think Vasilevsky was so important for the team. When they had trouble scoring, when they were missing some of the stars, he would really show up. So I think that's pretty exciting to see kind of where that award goes. But I do think it'll be Vasilevsky this year. He would be my pick.
Stephen Ellis, web editor for the Hockey News and a member of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Diehards tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Sure thing. Coming up next, we're going to dive into the Aaron Rodgers situation and the latest on that front. We've also got my take on the Mavs' instability, earmuffs Jack McGraw, what's going on with the Pelicans and Zion Williamson. And at 9:25 Eastern, we'll have Gambling Corner with Connor Mack to help put more money in your pockets as well as your bank accounts. And after that, we'll wrap up the show by discussing the best NBA players under 25 who you'd want to start a team with. Stick with us here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Welcome back to the Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network. In the first half, Trae Young scored or assisted on 35 of the Hawks' 51 points. Atlanta up 51-47 to start the second half. Like I said, if the Hawks don't close them out tonight, they will lose this series. I guarantee it. But now I want to bring in Jack McGraw. He's heard a number of takes throughout the first half of the program. I know that this is one of the people's favorite segments. So, Jack, real quick, give us the favorite take you heard so far tonight, as well as your least favorite.
I'll start with the least. Not enough Hawks love. I thought there would be a little bit more Hawks talk. But favorite, definitely some NHL talk, because this NHL season playoffs has been tremendous.
Coming up next, the latest on what's happening between the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Stick with us here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.